Well, welcome to Launch, where we talk to entrepreneurs about the start of their business and how things go, you know, from beginning to end. And I'm here with my co-host, Jim DeBetta, is not here today, but I'm here with our producer, Lee Cantor.
And you're Ron Reardon.
That's right.
We're ready to launch this show today, aren't we, Ron?
That's right. And hopefully my son is listening because he has listened to every single one of these.
And that music was in honor of him.
That's right.
Because he was giving us a hard time about the intro music. So now we've updated a little bit.
I hope
it's to his liking.
Okay. We're going to get a vote from him for sure.
There we go.
But today we want to talk about financing, because that's one of the items that's really critical when you're launching your business, is where's the money going to come from in order to get this thing going and to keep it going.
And do you find that people underestimate the amount of time and money that it takes to really get things off the ground?
Yes, they do. I mean, you know, part of my background is I was in IT, you know, with a large Fortune 500 company. And whenever we would estimate how long it was going to take to rewrite a system, we would get the people in there with the best experience, and they would come up with their best estimate of how long it would take and
right.
all like that. And then we would double it, and that's what we would present to management.
No matter what they said,
yeah,
even though they had a rationale for it taking 6 months, you would say it'll take a year.
Right, and then it would take a year and a half.
And then so it would be even...
Predictable. I mean, just... we couldn't believe it. You know, we would sit there and say it's going to take 6 months. We'll make it a year to give us a cushion, and it would end up taking a year and a half, mainly because of all the interfaces and delays and stuff
right.
like that. And that is exactly true with people starting a company. It's going to take them longer for the money to really start rolling in,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to take more money than they thought.
Right. Now, when a person is looking to begin this process, is there a rule of thumb about how to go about the finance conversation with your spouse and with your team, you know?
Well, the spouse is always the critical part, because just like opposites attract. I was talking with my son recently about how every marriage, there's one person that is the spender and one person's the saver. They seem to just kind of attract each other.
balance out in the universe, right?
Well, mm-hmm. and that's part of what causes tension in a marriage, is because one person, you know, is risk adverse and the other one, you know, is... has a real high risk tolerance.
Right.
Okay. And that's true when it comes to the money for a new item. I remember reading a story about Jeff Bezos of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
He'd quit his job out on the East Coast, and they're driving. And as they're driving, he's sitting there with his laptop, and he's trying to figure out what city they're going to. Okay.
So yeah, he's just driving.
They're just driving. He told her head west. Okay. And you're talking about one, understanding spouse. And not only did he not know what city he was going to, he didn't know what business they were going to be in. Okay.
Wow.
And, you know, finally decided on books,
right.
you know, surprise, surprise, for a lot of reasons, and decided, I think, on Seattle is where he ended up.
Mm-hmm.
And both of which were good decisions. But yeah, he had to have one understanding spouse to just say drive west.
Right.
We're going to be in business.
Put the U-Haul on the back, right?
Right.
Just keep driving.
And there's not too many spouses that are understanding. So a lot of times when somebody's starting a business, you know, whether it's the female or the male, they got to have a spouse that's willing to kind of have a long term view of when the money's going to come in, because starting a new venture is risky. I think. I forget what the statistics are, but something like 4 out of 5 new businesses fail.
Okay. Right. And financing is one of the main reasons.
Yeah, that's usually the big one, is that they think if they got enough money for 6 months, then organic growth, they'll be able to keep going. And the reality is, that I always tell people that it's like the three stages of growing English ivy, that the first year you plant English ivy, it's sleeping, the second year it's creeping, and the third year it's leaping. And most new businesses start out that way,
mm-hmm.
and that... The first year, there's no money coming in. A lot of money going out. No
right.
Money
not
money
only
in.
Is no money coming in, money is going out.
That's
so
right.
So, like, you're negative.
Right.
You're not even. You're negative.
So, if you can imagine a chart, you know, where you've got the old XY axis, you know, you're below, you know,
the axis right.
because you're in Z.
You're in that area
where, you know, you've spent a lot of money and nothing's happening.
Right.
And usually that in the second year or the second period, you start making some money, but it's not a lot. And so on that chart, you start coming, you're approaching zero.
Okay? Right. You hope to approach zero.
And usually in the third year, you cross the zero line, and then you get into the positive.
Right.
And if you don't have enough money to last those 3 years, then you know, you're going to sink, you know, somewhere in that period because right. you just didn't have enough capital to.
And it may not be because you have a bad product or anything. It could just be you ran out of money.
Right. Yeah. And so that's part of the planning is to say, you know, hey, you know, we got to have a 3-year thing because, you know, at the beginning you have this wild enthusiasm and you're very optimistic right. and everybody's going to want one of these, not understanding, you know, that things about exposure and, you know, and reach and distribution right. and things like that. That it takes a while to just get to, you know, the consumers knowing, you know, that you're
there. Even exist.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, from a financing standpoint, you know, you got to have that understanding spouse, and, right. and you really need to really lay out the business plan.
And really think in the long term, this isn't a short term fix. You
no.
got to really be invested for the long haul.
That's
if
right.
If you want to have the best chance to succeed.
Yeah. You know, I've read the story at Spanx.com, you know, of how she got started, and it basically took her 5 years,
mm-hmm.
okay, from conception to...
5 years to be an overnight success.
That's right. That's correct. And I always guide, you know, budding entrepreneurs towards that site, you know, where it says about Sarah so they can read her story, Sarah Bakely, who started Spanx, and to say, this is pretty typical.
Okay? Right.
Because, I mean, she was selling fax machines door to door and sick of it, you know. And but yeah, she had her doubts, and she did a lot of things herself. Okay, but then she, you know, eventually had to find a manufacturer and somebody to do the intellectual property and stuff like
but
that.
But I think at each stage, like when you're doing it yourself, you can get only so far.
That's right.
And then you're like, well, do I have? To, should I quit now, or should I take it another step? And another step usually means investing money into
right.
into the next step.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, the different elements that you've got, you know, for success is, you know, you got to have that good idea,
mm-hmm.
okay? But then you got to have a really thorough plan,
right?
Okay, of how to take that idea to market. And you need a really good team,
right?
You know, a team of people that have skill sets that you don't have.
Right.
And usually you're going to have to pay those folks, okay? Or unless you find folks that really don't need the money and they're willing to take, you know, an equity interest in your company.
Right. Okay? And what are the percentage of times that happens?
Usually you have to pay the people.
Right. That's the minority, right?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs think that that's going to happen if you show somebody a really good idea, that they're going to jump right on that the ground floor opportunity.
Right. And, you know, I get lots of people coming to me saying, you know, well, I can't pay you, you know, for
right,
your
but
services.
I'll give you a percentage.
I'll give you a percentage. And I was like, no, you know.
Right. I can't buy groceries with a percentage.
That's right. You know, it's like I work for food, okay?
Right.
So, no, you know, I did that at the beginning, and, you know, it was one of those learning experiences.
Right.
Like, okay, note to self, don't
don't do this again.
Don't do this. Because, you know, if they succeed, the timeline, you know, is 3 to 5 years
right.
before you ever see, you know, a return on your efforts. And then the probability is that they're not going to succeed.
Right.
So it's better to just, like, you know, I'll get you the absolute, you know, best work that I can do.
Right.
No guarantees, but no, not for equity.
Right.
But there are folks out there, you know, that we're going to talk about financing, you know, the angel investors, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take a portion of their money that they're going to put into pretty risky items, and they're going to do their best due diligence, but they still know that if they invest in 10 ventures, 9 of them are going to go belly up.
Right.
But that 10th one, they're counting on getting, you know, 100-fold return.
Right, to make up for the 9 that lost.
That's right. And they're not betting all their money. They just have a certain
right.
portion of their money that they're using.
Right, it's more of a speculative investment.
That's right. That's right. That's something that get better than the stock market.
Okay? Right. Well, which isn't that hard.
Right? That's right. But the United Nations did a study several years ago about where do entrepreneurs get their money for their
right.
business. And they basically came up with what's called...
So this is international. This isn't just America.
No, this was everywhere. You know, of course, they studied the United States pretty heavily. But, yeah, this is pretty much worldwide.
Right.
This is where entrepreneurs get their money. And they call it the 4 F's, okay? And they had to stretch on the last one to make it an F. But the first one was founder. The person you see in
right.
the person
the,
you see
the inventor,
mirror.
The guy,
yeah,
right.
yeah, the you know the Jeff Bezos, you know,
right.
that comes up with the idea. The second one was family,
right?
Okay, that's pretty logical. The third one was friends, and then the fourth one, which is a stretch, is foolhardy investors, which
right.
is
the, those are the angel investors.
Those are the angels, right. okay? That they know that they're tossing their money on 9 out of
right.
the 10 investments. Okay, that's just the nature of it, and they're not risk adverse. Okay,
right, obviously,
yeah, they just like to be in, you know.
Well, they like
engaged.
The energy of a startup and of
right.
beginning the process. There's
yeah.
a lot, you know, it's an exciting time.
Right. One of my favorite stories, I read this several years ago, was the two fellows that started Google. At the very beginning, before they'd done anything, they had the algorithm, okay, the search algorithm. They did a presentation to one of the co-founders of Sun Microsystems. They get 10 minutes into their PowerPoint, and he says, stop, I've seen enough. Pulls out his checkbook, writes it to Google Incorporated, $200,000, says, I want an equity interest in what you're doing. You know, I get it. I believe in it. Okay, and didn't even let him finish the presentation.
Right, he heard enough.
Okay, 2 weeks later, they're looking at the check. They're saying, I guess we need to incorporate and get a bank account that says Google Incorporated so we can cash this check. Okay, that's how early it was. But, you know, he had money, okay, obviously. And he could see the vision. Okay, he knew this was going to work, okay? When Google went public, his investment turned into something over $200 million.
Right. So he was a big winner.
He was a very big winner.
But you don't hear his stories of the $200,000 that he invested in, you know, Joe Schmo Inc.
Right.
You know, that blew up.
Yeah, I've read one story about who's the fellow that said Go West, young man? The writer. Come on. But anyway, he was an inventor himself. He invented a scrapbook and different things like that. And he invested in a lot of people's inventions and lost his shirt on every single one of them.
Right.
So that when people came to him saying, hey, you know, will you invest in this? He's like, no, I've lost so much money in this. It was just unbelievable.
But you always think like, oh, this could be the one. Like, that's the mindset of the angel investor is like, this could be the one.
Yeah, I mean, you never know.
Because that's it. You really don't know until you put it out there. I mean, on paper, lots of things sound like a good idea.
Right.
But it's just once it's, you know, manufactured and it's out there in the public, and the public decides whether they like it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read so many stories about people that didn't invest in something that didn't.
Right, they missed out.
Yeah. I don't know if I've mentioned it on this program, but one was they were interviewing Art Linkletter, and they asked him, you know, do you have any regrets in your life? And he says, I have one regret. And he says, this young fella by the name of Walt Disney came to me wanting me to invest in this silly theme park he was putting together, and I turned him down, okay?
Right.
And so he's kind of kicking himself for that. And then a friend of mine that I grew up with, he was there in Memphis, Tennessee, and this young fella came by and said, you know, I need somebody to be an accountant for me, and he was a CPA.
Okay? Right.
And he says, well, you know, I'd be glad to do that. He says, well, you know, I can't pay you. I'm just starting my company.
Right.
And, you know, so you're going to have to work for nothing, you know, until we get things going. He's like, go away.
Got it, right.
Well, the guy was Fred Smith with FedEx. Okay. He turned down FedEx. But, you know, how do you know? It was just a guy going door to door looking for an accountant, you know.
Right. Free labor.
That's right. So, yeah, and there's lots of stories like that.
Right.
Of, how do you know at the beginning that this thing's going to take off?
But you just don't know. There's a luck involved. There's, you know, you don't know how passionate and how dedicated that the founder is.
Right.
You know, when they're going to run out of energy and say, you know, I got to get a real job, you know, and be out.
Yep. So when you look at the four Fs, so, you know, the first one's founder. You know,
right. So
where do you think the founder is going to find their money?
Credit cards.
Yeah, credit cards is one thing. Second mortgage on the home. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, you know, dip into their 401k or something like that. And of course,
which nowadays that might be a good play is to take money that you invest in the stock market, invest in yourself. I mean, you're a stock, really. I mean, that's what you're betting on your business as going up in value as you would just investing in, you know, Amazon.
That's right. I mean, you are the business. Okay?
Right.
But but you know, you've got to look at those sources of money. Generally, banks are not going to give you any money.
Right. I noticed there was no. Bank with the four
there's no bank. You know, banks will loan you money when you don't need it.
Right, when you have money.
That's right.
After you're successful, then they'll be like, oh, want more?
Yeah, because banks are really risk averse.
Right. Okay. They only want winners.
Yeah. I mean, one of the suggestions for any entrepreneur is when you're starting off is to develop a really good relationship with the president of a little small community bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You don't go with a big bank. You go with a small bank where you know the person, they know you, you've been in the community, you know, and, you know, maybe they'll attach, you know, a third mortgage to your house or something
right.
like that.
They'll be more flexible.
But they're more flexible. So that's always a word of wisdom to the founder is.
So even though that you may not need their money or you need them, but you're not going to ask for it too early on, but it would be a good idea to set up when it's time to set up your bank account, set it up in a smaller community bank rather than one of the mega banks.
Right, and start it at the beginning. I mean, if you've got a day job,
right,
and you've got good credit and things like that, you know, at the very beginning, get that line of credit.
Right.
Because as you start going below the X
right.
Yeah, line,
it's
going
to be harder to get at that point.
As time goes on, you know, it's going to be harder and harder for you to be able to get any money. So mm-hmm. when you're doing pretty good at the beginning before you've really launched the business, that's the time to get your financing
right.
in place.
Right.
Okay, because it's going to get tight as things go on.
Right. I mean, then you should be planning. You're going to know that that's going to happen.
That's right.
It's not shouldn't be a surprise.
That's right. And then the second half, of course, is family. And the risk with getting money from family is that if and when things do go south,
right.
and you've lost it all and you've got to shut everything down,
those are hard conversations.
Those are really hard mm-hmm. conversations, especially at Christmas and Thanksgiving
right.
and stuff
and
like
from
that.
From that point forward in time.
Fourth of July. Any time the family's getting together, it's like,
right.
oh, yes,
yeah.
Nephew, I gave right. you this money, and when am I getting it back? And it's
right.
like, well, Uncle, it's gone.
Right.
You have to understand, you know.
You have to be willing to,
yeah.
to be placed in that uncomfortable position should the bad stuff happen.
Yeah, and there's a couple in town that they had two inventions. And the first invention they had, they put their money into, and they got their family's money into it, and it failed miserably, and everybody lost their shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, they had a second invention that succeeded wildly, and everybody got their money back plus.
Right, plus.
Okay? But if they had not had that second one, it
could have been awkward.
It could have been extremely awkward.
Okay. Now, how much, when you do go to your family, if you choose to do that, What kind of money are you asking them for, and what kind of terms do family members typically get? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, usually you're asking for $1,000, $5,000, $10,000. No, you're not asking for gazillions because they don't have it. Okay?
Right.
But they're willing to say, okay, here's, you know, nephew or son or whatever. You know,
right.
Here's $5,000, here's $10,000. And in terms, I mean, it's usually good, you know, for you to form a corporation
right.
where they can actually get some stock in the company, but it might be just, you know, paper.
Right, it's pretend stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, it's real that it's legal, but it's pretend that it has value.
It's pretend, yeah. And they need to know, you know, that they're not going to see their money for at least 3 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You need to have those conversations at the beginning, okay? And a lot of times, you know, in their mind, you know, the relative is just giving you the money. They're not expecting it to,
right.
to really return. Okay,
right.
It all depends on whether it's the cranky uncle or the
right.
or the kindly grandmother or whatever.
I would aim first at the kindly grandmother as an investor. Right?
That's correct.
And you have to make it clear that you have to tell them that there's a chance they may not get their money back. Like, you can't make it seem like, oh, this is a sure thing because some guy told me that this is a winner.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, it's risky. Any new venture is risky.
Right.
Okay.
But this is even more risky.
Yeah, it really is. And like I said, it's going to take 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And so if they're expecting to give you the money today.
And then in 6 months, double their money.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Right.
Okay.
It's not a CD.
No.
Right.
No, it's really not. And then, you know, an extension of the family is going to be friends.
Right. And it's a similar probably thing with friends, right? Because you
right.
want. Same term, same kind of investment.
That's true, but it's not a blood relationship.
Right, so
okay.
if you never see them again, it's less awkward.
Yeah, and because, you know, I've heard the saying that, you know, one of the best ways to lose a friend is a loan of money.
Exactly.
Okay.
I've heard that same saying.
Yeah, and so they you know, they need to understand, you know, that when they're, you know, investing in your company, that there's really a business situation.
Right.
You know them through friendship, but this is business. Okay.
Right, and but then you get into the... How come you're not working now? Like, why are you going to the beach? You know, I gave you $5,000. You know, you should never stop working until you pay me back.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah, and you know that kind of distraction can get you off point when you're trying to build your business.
Right.
Is people, you know, calling you up and it's like, when are you gonna give me my money back? You know?
Right.
And or like you said, why aren't you, you know, why are you taking some time off? You should
right.
be, you know, hammering it down, you know. What are you doing between midnight and 5 a.m?
Right. You know, sleep's overrated.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, my recommendation for people that are starting up a business is not really go the Jeff Bezos route of just quit your job and
just
here you go.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually best if you can do this on nights and weekends.
Right. Or kind of
while you still got a day job.
Right.
Knowing, you know, this 1 to 3 years that you can get through this 1 to 3 years
while someone else is paying you a salary.
Yeah, while you're still got some money coming in.
Right.
And do this, you know, when you're not at the job.
Right.
That's really the best situation to be in.
I think so too. It's but then you got to be more patient. You got to realize that look, you can only put in a few hours each day.
Right.
So it might take longer than the 3 to 5 years because you're not putting your 100% effort in.
That's correct. That's correct. And then, you know, the last F is the foolhardy investors, the angel investors. And the thing to realize about them is these are people like you and I, except they got money.
Right. A lot of money.
It's like I've always heard it said that, you know, when Bill Gates and I are in the same room, there's a lot of money in that room. It's just not equally distributed.
Right. Exactly. It's all in his side of the room.
It's all in his pocket, not mine, you know. But, you know, angel investors, you know, they've got money. Either they've had a business and they sold it and they've got the money, or they inherited the money, or they won the lottery.
Right.
Or,
it could be a million different ways, yeah, but they have money.
They retired, but they've got money. And they take a portion of that money that they're going to invest. And so they know that, you know, out of the 10 ventures that they put money into, only one's going to succeed,
right?
Hopefully, okay? But basically, investors, you know, it's not like you just go up to them with an idea and says, you know, give me some money.
No, this isn't your kindly grandmother. They're going to want a little more documentation than
that. They basically want to know, okay, how much money do you need? What are you going to do with it? When do I get my money back?
Well, they're going to definitely want to see some sort of a business plan.
Yeah.
They're not going to just go because, you know, you're the favorite son
right.
that get the check.
Yep.
That's not going to work.
And these folks usually have seen a lot of business plans.
Right.
Okay. And so if you don't capture them with your elevator speech, you know, right there in the first couple of minutes, then you've lost them.
Right.
And if your executive summary doesn't really grab them, you know, then you've lost them.
Right.
Okay, before they start looking into the details. But it's really important to have really a good, you know, elevator speech that you're telling them, you know, what the business is and, you know, what the potential is, and to have that really good executive summary that's backed up. Because they've all seen the hockey stick
sales curve.
Yeah, right. It's just like, yeah, we start off at zero and it goes and to a gazillion dollars in 1 year.
Exactly. And they're on to that. That yeah. doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, and you want to make sure in your business plan that you never use the phrase there is no competition.
Right. Okay. That's another red flag. They don't right. like that.
There's always competition.
And they'd like you to have competition because that proves at least people are going to buy something similar to what you have.
Yeah.
You know, that validates at least a little bit.
Yeah, because if there's no competition, there might be a reason why right. there's no competition.
Nobody wants it.
Nobody wants it at the price point. Or
right.
But, yeah, you need to know how to deal with those folks because they see business plans day in, day out. Everybody wants their money.
Right.
And the other thing is that You might have a really great business plan, but it just doesn't resonate with that particular investor.
Right.
Because if he came, let's say, from the healthcare field, and what you've got is not related to that at all, he'll just look at it and it's like, well, I don't know anything about that business.
Right, he's just not interested.
And,
right.
And so he'll turn you down, not because it's not a good business, but it's just it's not his area of expertise.
Right.
But, you know, if he's been in healthcare and you're new launching a new thing with healthcare, he looks at it and says, yeah, I get it. You know,
right.
You know. And then you have to also realize that the angel investor might want to have to participate in the
yes.
operation of the company, but he might not.
Right.
An angel investor is different on stuff like that.
Well, and that's I have some friends that have had companies that were funded with venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
And one person I know pretty well, the company was doing, got money from venture capital. And then the lo and behold, the venture capital people said, you know what? We like this, but we don't like you doing this. So they gave him an exit strategy that is now the venture capitalist company.
Yeah. And that's something that you need to realize when you go to somebody for some money is that you might lose control.
Right.
Totally. Okay. Because in general, I mean, there's rare exceptions. Usually the entrepreneur, you know, or the inventor is the wrong person to be running the company.
Right.
Okay. And when investors come in, they quickly see that. I mean, mm-hmm. even Bill Gates realized he needed to be the chief technology officer
right.
and not, you know, Ballmer running the company.
Right.
Okay. And like I said, there's rare exceptions, I think, with Hewlett and Packard and right. a few things like that, or Andy Grove, where the entrepreneur actually was the right person for running the company. But in general, the person that starts it is not the one that finishes it.
Right. And also, and they have to understand that when you're asking someone for money, you're taking their money, but you're giving them a part of your business.
Right. Right.
So the more parts you give up, the less parts you have, and that means the less control you have, and the less you may not get the say-so anymore on decisions, and you know, you could slowly give up total control of your company.
Right, and that's something that you need to consider.
Right.
Is that, you know, I always tell people, you know, it's better to have, you know, 1% of a gazillion dollars than to have 100% of zero.
Right.
And if control is a real issue with entrepreneurs, right, is that they want to do everything
their way.
Their way. And that can really kill a company.
Right.
Okay. Kill a venture is just like, well, yeah, I need investors, but I'm not willing to give up control. And so you pass up the opportunity to get funding when you need it. And, you know, there goes
the
business.
And the window goes away. You know, that window in time when everything was aligned where you could get money,
right,
goes away. And then.
Yeah. Because, you know, you look at here in Atlanta, Ted Turner. You know, he was in control at one time, but then once he joined up with Time Warner,
right,
I mean, he was their largest shareholder, but he was definitely not in control.
Right. And then look what happened. I mean, they booted him right out of there.
That's right. And that's a real predictable scenario.
And that was really the end of his whole, you know, empire.
That's right.
Even though he was the largest shareholder in Time Warner.
Yeah, I guess I remember that one time he went and visited CNN, I think up in New York or wherever, and everybody's like, you know, oh, go, Ted Turner's here. And he's like, this is after, you know, Time Warner. He says, well, you know, look, the founder is here, but not the owner.
Exactly.
He's making it real clear who
right.
he was, you know.
Yeah, and that's, but that's a bitter pill for a lot of business owners.
Yeah, it really is. But, I think you're probably familiar with the sleep number bed.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually met the inventor of that, the mm-hmm. guy that actually created it and all like that. He got to a point where his company was doing okay, but he realized he needed a CEO that really knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And once he hired that CEO, he basically retired himself, okay,
right,
and went off to invent something else that had to do with those natural fireplaces, you know, would put little pellets in and like that.
Right.
And he went to do something else, and ever since he left, that company's been doing wonderful.
Right.
So it was a good move, you know.
Right. And, like, it needed him to start it because it was a good product, but it needed somebody else to run it.
Right. Because it's different skill sets. You know,
right.
Once the company gets to a certain size, usually you don't have the founder doesn't have the skill set to really grow it.
Right, because it's no longer innovation anymore. It's just kind of maintaining and managing.
That's right. That's true.
Right.
Well, this has been a really great discussion about financing that I think all of our listeners would really like.
Yeah, and then what were you had mentioned a couple of places for them to go. What are the resources you would recommend? The Spanx website?
Yeah, Spanx, you go to spanx.com. It's SPANX.com. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And there's a little icon there that says About Sarah.
Right.
And you can read her story.
And that would give you a good idea of what a real example of an entrepreneur.
Yep, that's the model. I mean, you look
right.
at that and you just put, you know, take her name out, and put your name in there, and this is
what's
going to go
that's
through.
That's your future, your next 5 years.
Yep, that's true.
And then that UN report about the four Fs?
You know, I'd have to look up exactly what the link is to that report,
because
I saw that several years ago.
Uh-huh.
I probably saw it at either, you know, Inc.com or, you know, Entrepreneur.com. You know, mm-hmm. one of those sites is probably where I saw it.
Great. All right. So I guess that wraps up another episode of Launch. For Ron Reardon, I am Lee Cantor, and for Jim DeBetta, who isn't here today, we will see you next week.
Goodbye.